How's everybody doing tonight? So how about tonight's music by Carter Sampson? What y'all think? She has CDs for sale after the show, and you can hear more at cartersampson.net. All right, well, welcome to Starving Artist Cafe in the Argenta Arts District of North Little Rock, Arkansas, and to another edition of Tales from the South, where Southerners bring their own true stories to life. Tales from the South is presented by the Argenta Arts Foundation and Temenos Publishing Company, both right here in North Little Rock, Arkansas. And I'm your host, Paula Morrell. All right, are y'all ready for some Southern-style storytelling? Tonight is our sixth annual Mother's Show, and tonight's writers show us the joys, the mania, and the downright powers of motherhood. All stories are true and told by the Southerners who live them. Let's start the night with Mae Griebel as she tries to gain control of the motherhood mania threatening to overtake her in You Are Doing What?
My husband, usually a placid man, screamed into the phone at me. What are you saying? He demanded. You are doing what? I tried to talk to him, but with hiccuping through my sobs, my words were garbled and unclear. I'm coming, he said. I'll be there. In my defense, I had just given birth. Postpartum, hormones are awry. Mood swings are par for the course. I am a major control freak by character, but I found myself struggling and uncertain. My husband and I were in the second year of our medical residency training when, to our delight, we found out that a little bundle of joy was coming our way. After amniocentesis revealed that our child was a healthy female, I began to picture a beautiful little girl who would sit at my knee as I read to her and who would wear bows and bangles and smocky frilled dresses. I also saw myself as calm and in masterful control. But when it came to parenting, I had a shock. Babies do not come with instruction manuals. After we brought our long-awaited baby girl home, reality hit hard. I had never been around babies, except in the hospital where I was training. Previously, I had had oodles of Girl Scout, babysitting, and camp experience, but never with babies. I had not changed two diapers in a row on the same child. In my naivete, I pictured a three-month interval off from work, during which I would be the queen of breastfeeding and the truly perfect mom. I also planned to research and write up at least two excellent case studies and literature reviews to send for publication in respected medical journals. Instead, we had trouble establishing a rhythm. She cried and I rocked. She cried and I walked. She cried and I put her in her car seat on the clothes dryer with the high setting turned on, as another mother had advised me to do. The warmth and the vibration were posited to calm colicky babies. Had I had the presence of mind to turn off the dryer alarm button first, it would have helped with my first trial at that maneuver. Subsequent results were a bit more successful. My father-in-law, having retired recently, visited frequently. In his big, strong hands and arms, my little crying machine would smile and coo and sleep. I began to doubt all my abilities and to think that I was truly irrational. That assessment was not far from the truth. My anxiety peaked one day when our daughter was about 6 weeks old. Physically, I felt awful when my husband left for the hospital that morning. But I ate my breakfast, fed our puzzling but beloved infant, rocked her, cleaned her up, and laid her in a crib, all ready to nap. This particular day, she was very quiet and fell asleep quickly. Strange, I thought, but maybe I'm finally getting this motherhood thing down. However, my peace of mind was interrupted by the realization that I hurt all over, and my forehead felt burning hot to my hand. I took my temperature, 104 degrees. Uh-oh, I thought, what in the dickens is wrong with me? Logically, in my best doctorly fashion, I performed a review of systems and a perfunctory physical exam upon myself. No rash, no breast tenderness or redness, no burning with urination, no cough, no sore throat, no stomach ache, no diarrhea. except for the muscle aches and the markedly elevated temperature, I could find nothing wrong. This process had taken a little while, and at that point, my daughter was eating about every 2 hours during the day. The need to nurse her again would quickly be approaching. What is wrong with me? I reiterated. Then it hit me. I had a virus of some type. Now, up to that point, I had been doing my best to attempt to think logically, but I began to panic. For it to cause such a fever and such muscle pain, it had to be a bad virus. Maybe even a cousin of Ebola. Worse yet, it was undoubtedly circulating in my bloodstream. I had viremia. Even worse, because the mythical virus was theoretically in my blood, it would also be in my breast milk. I had just fed our baby. My dear, sweet little daughter, quiet and sleeping in the bassinet beside me, was resting so apparently well because she also was sick, in my distorted mind, at least. Babies don't handle illnesses well when they're so little. I was viremic, she was viremic, and she was going to die. I was killing our baby. I called my husband, who was on cardiology rounds. I am so sorry, I said. Please forgive me, don't hate me. What's wrong, he quickly queried. I'm killing our baby, I replied. What, he demanded. I sobbed as I tried to tell him of my fears. By report, his face turned bright red as he looked at the attending staff cardiologist saying, there's an emergency at my house with my wife and my baby daughter. Then he flew home. By the time he arrived, our baby was screaming lustfully. She was hungry and she wanted to eat. Between sobs and hiccups, I hastily told him the whole awful story. Honey, it will be okay, he said. And he calmly picked up our daughter, quickly warmed a pre-prepared bottle of formula which we had been given, and began to feed the squalling infant. In the meantime, I was sobbing, trying to stop him, saying, she won't take that. She's never had anything but breast milk. After she had eagerly sucked down 6 ounces, our wee one was cooling, and she happily let her dad change her and put her in her crib. He checked her temperature. Normal. He then turned to me, smiled gently, and said, babe, you know that the odds are that you have mastitis, a breast infection. He quietly began to examine me, and lo and behold, my left milk machine in the meantime had become tender, red, and hot. The obstetrician readily agreed with his diagnosis, reassured me that I earlier had done exactly the right thing to feed her and that I had not exposed our infant to any risk, then called in an antibiotic to which my fever rapidly responded. 2 days later, I was fine. A bit embarrassed, but fine. The whole event has subsequently been incorporated into our family file of stories in the Crazy Mom collection, which I regret to say is the largest of the lot. Our daughter is a wonderful young adult with a great sense of humor and with more resilience than I have ever mustered up. Motherhood, despite all of its trials, is hands down the best thing I've ever done. And as a bonus, this experience helped to shape my approach as a doctor, as I tried to listen closely to and understand upset parents whose worries might sound irrational to some, but which made perfect sense to me. After all, I'd been there.
Until recently, Mae Griebel was a physician at UAMS and Arkansas Children's Hospital. She hopes now to have more time to devote to writing, reading, and other loves. In our next story, Jan Hamlet goes to be the mother to her daughter, but ends up in reverse in Turnabout.
Just do what I'm telling you to do. Staring straight ahead, gripping the steering wheel, and wondering how that tone could have emerged from the mouth of my usually cheerful, even-tempered 30-year-old daughter, I did precisely what she was telling me to do. I maneuvered her car into the nearest left turn lane in order to make a left into the right lane on the street perpendicular to the one we were on. Concerned and confused, I tried to remain calm for her sake. Someone just discharged from the hospital should not be this worked up. Her raised voice was an echo from the past, the voice of a frustrated mother. But I was the mother. How did things get so turned around? That was the frantic question I had recently asked myself as I exited the Dallas Hospital parking garage. Jennifer had been discharged just this morning following her surgery 4 days earlier. She had learned a couple of months earlier that she would need surgery to remove some small benign tumors, a short, relatively simple operation, according to her doctor, but an open abdominal surgery under general anesthesia nonetheless. Her recovery period would be about 6 weeks. I had come prepared to stay with her during her recuperation as long as she needed me, but my husband had returned to his job in Little Rock. Her boyfriend had also gone back to work, so I was the designated driver, only by default. Having learned to drive in my hometown where there is one four-way stop at the intersection of Main and the highway, I had subsequently lived in larger places, but none larger than Little Rock. Finally, after only a year and a half in the city, I had almost learned how to tell 4:30 from 6:30, and I was working on 5:30. I had driven to Dallas alone to visit Jennifer a few times, but my driving responsibilities always ended when I parked my car outside her apartment. On this day, I was determined to fulfill my chauffeuring duties without incident. But the trip home had gotten off to a rocky start when Jennifer handed me what she referred to as her car keys. Bewildered, I asked, "Where's the key?" "Oh, yeah, I meant to tell you. You insert that round thing into the hole on the console." "Wait, what? It's not on the steering column?" "Oh, no, a bad omen," I thought. "This was not your mother's Oldsmobile." The nurse had already arrived with a wheelchair and a cart, which was insufficient for both the luggage and the flowers. Nervous and distracted, with bags in hand, I headed to the elevator. Already intimidated by Dallas traffic, I realized I had never driven her new car, and I was clutching a key that was not even a key. Upon my return, I was made aware of a miscommunication about my bringing the car to a side door, which I had not done. The nurse assumed an attitude of long suffering as we accompanied Jennifer and her flowers down to the front door. None of us could have foreseen the possibility of my getting lost going from the parking garage to the entrance. However, in my defense, the exit leads to a different street altogether, thus negating my 4 days of careful self-orientation. Finally, I spotted the entrance where Jennifer and the nurse were waiting. They were both staring expectantly toward the garage. Unfortunately, I was in the wrong lane, so I had to pass it up and find a place to turn around. Having escaped their notice, I almost made it back to them before my cell phone rang, but I was delayed by traffic. Jennifer's somewhat impatient yet restrained voice asked, "Where are you?" "Almost there," I said. I was out of the car in a flash, explaining, apologizing, and hastily cramming half a dozen flower arrangements into the back. Speaking tersely as she helped her charge into the car, the nurse glared at me and stepped back onto the sidewalk. Her job was done. At last, we were free to get some lunch and head home via the pre-planned non-freeway route. Jennifer had protested that it would take us forever, but I did not care as long as I did not have to merge or toss change into that little basket on the tollway. "Just drive. You don't have to go so slowly," she told me as we were catching every light. Trying not to make any sudden stops, I was attempting to avoid causing her pain or stress. I began to think I was not accomplishing my goal. As we neared her area of the city, we were ready to make our two stops, the pharmacy and the grocery store. This is where it all fell apart, largely due to those pesky medians, one of which was blocking the pharmacy entrance. This created the disconcerting necessity of making a U-turn in order to turn in. After successfully negotiating the prescription drop-off, we headed to the grocery store across the street. As I rounded the corner of the pharmacy, I was told to turn left up there. thinking she meant to turn left on the street, in spite of the fact that I saw a median blocking me, I headed in that direction. As I zoomed forward, she said, "Right here." She was pointing toward a lane in the parking lot. Who knew? Braking hard enough to throw her body forward was not something I had intended to do on this jaunt. I drove to the other exit and tried to decipher what I was hearing. As I recall, Jennifer's instructions to stay in the right lane and follow that white car did not match up. What a mix-up. I thought I should go straight, but the white car was in the left turn lane. How was I supposed to know about the other white car over there in the right lane? After finishing the grocery shopping, I assessed the situation. I could see the pharmacy across the street to my left, and I knew I could get there by going back exactly the way I had just come, U-turn and all. My trepidation over the left turn from the grocery store was mitigated by the familiar green arrow. I was mentally prepared, and things were going pretty well until she told me to turn left at the next light. "Are you sure?" I asked. This is what finally drove her over the edge and caused our role reversal. I suddenly became the exasperating daughter scraping bare her mother's last nerve, and she became the frustrated parent as she shouted, "Just do what I am telling you to do." I did not say anything else. I just did as she told me and drove to the drugstore without further incident. Chastised and alarmed, ashamed, I became alarmed that the tears lurking behind my eyelids were causing my contact lenses to float. The very worst feeling was the pain that came from knowing that I had caused my brave little girl so much stress. I was supposed to be taking care of her. How could it have gone so wrong? How comforting it would have been at that moment to have experienced a fast forward into the weeks ahead. How nice it would have been to catch a glimpse of the two of us drinking coffee, laughing over trash TV, and engaging in some long-lost girl talk. How consoling it would have been to know that she would be willing to grant me the privilege of sitting in on her chats with her girlfriends and hanging out with her and her boyfriend. How gratifying it would have been to witness her perseverance through her recuperation, leading to the day when she would again solo in her car. And to know that once I was no longer needed, I would still be wanted. Alas, I was not granted that foreknowledge. It would unfold, as all things do, one day at a time. Instead, in real time, here we were with our food and drugs, ready for the last leg of the journey. We had survived, and we were both apologetic. The rest of the drive, she assured me, would be easy. My jaws relaxed a bit. My death grip on the wheel loosened some. As we approached the exit, Jennifer said, "Turn right." Still a bit disoriented, I almost asked her why. But I was afraid she would say, "Because I said so."
Jan Hamlin is a native Tennessean who currently resides in Little Rock, Arkansas. Somewhat directionally dyslexic, she sometimes reverses east and west, but she never confuses those other two, north and south. In our final story of the night, Mike Nolan thinks he's gotten away with something, but forgets his mother's all-encompassing knowing powers in My Mother, the...
Suspecting that your mom might be a witch is not really the dream of very many boys. At least not this boy. The advantages could be useful, like having your mom turn the school bully into a giant Gumby doll. The downside was much worse. Through her affinity for the dark arts, she could keep tabs on my siblings and me at all times. She knew my brother changed the grades on his report card. How? Witchcraft. She saw my sister feed the dog her vegetables instead of eating them. How? Witch's eye. But I digress. My own personal introduction into my mother's otherworldly abilities started with Patty, a blonde-haired, blue-eyed vision of beauty. She sat next to me in 1966 in Mrs. Bush's first grade class. I didn't want much, except Patty's never-ending love and affection. I spent every recess impressing her with my amazing kickball skills, as well as my incredible dexterity on the jungle gyms. I had perfected the no-hands, legs-only dismount to great acclaim. But even as a child, I realized I could not rest on my playground laurels to keep a cutie pie like Patty. Always looking for an edge, the perfect moment arrived when Mrs. Johnson, or whatever her name was, came to our class to teach us about fruits and vegetables. Can't you just imagine our excitement? During her spirited dissertation, which appeared to be falling on mostly tiny deaf ears, there came a golden opportunity for me to impress Patty and also eliminate any other would-be suitors. Mrs. Johnson was asking questions to the vapid dolts in my class and getting very little response. She started talking about bananas, which were and are a particular favorite of mine. Then she said, "Who knows where bananas come from?" As I looked around the room, it suddenly occurred to me, but I was about to blow this thing wide open. My hand shot up, much to the surprise of, well, everyone. Patty's eyes widened as I began to speak. "Bananas come from banana trees," I said with impressive authority. My classmates were more than a little shocked. Even Mrs. Johnson seemed suitably impressed as she smiled and said, "That's right." Having tasted the sweet nectar of success only made me want more. So I continued, "And I have a banana tree in my front yard." Just in case you aren't aware, banana trees are hardly indigenous to Arkansas. The entire room was stunned. Mrs. Johnson appeared to be flummoxed and, by this new revelation, was not really sure what to say next. I, however, was just getting started. With my adrenaline pumping and Patty smitten, I lost control. I should have shut it down right then and there, but I was drunk. Drunk with the imaginary power a good lie can deliver. So I pressed on. "In fact," I said, smirking, "I have a pet monkey that lives in that tree and brings me bananas whenever I want them." My pals reacted as if they had just seen a rocket launching from NASA with me in the cockpit. Mrs. Johnson was speechless. Mrs. Bush was plotting my demise. After an initial silence, the class erupted with questions. "What's your monkey's name? Can you bring him to school? Does he wear pants?" After fielding as many questions as possible, I was finally saved by the bell for recess. At recess, it only got worse. Kids I didn't even know were coming up to me, asking me all kinds of questions. Even sixth graders were talking to me. I was a god. As the buzz finally died down and Patty and I settled into our roles as the it couple of the first grade, life was good. A few nights later, as my family finished supper and I was enjoying the last few bites of Mom's meatloaf, when things took an unexpected turn. Mom asked if anyone wanted dessert, and of course my brother, sister, and I all chimed in, "Yes!" My mother turned her head slightly, looked me dead in the eye, and very sweetly said, "Would you like some cookies, or cake, or ice cream, or maybe a banana?" The last word exploded out of her mouth like a blast from a cannon. Everyone at the table jumped, causing my dad to spill milk all over the linoleum floor and the dog. I was confused, and my dad said, "What the heck was that all about?" My mom's stare was still locked on mine, locked and loaded. Then she spoke with anger usually reserved for the thoughtless fool who left the toilet seat up in the middle of the night.
"Why don't you have your monkey go get it from our tree? In the front yard!"
Knowing full well the jig was up, I went into my defensive mode, crying. My brother and sister started laughing. "What monkey? Are we getting a monkey? Can we name him Pebbles?" Dad was still mopping up milk with a roll of paper towels when Mom told him what I had told my class. Didn't sound nearly so good coming from her. She was not as impressed with my story as my friends had been. She was furious. I continued to cry and did the sobbing, hiccup, talking thingy, saying, "I am so sorry." Mom would have none of that. She sent me into my room to await my punishment. As I lay on my Beanie and Cecil bedspread, counting the minutes until my impending death, I tried to comprehend how my mom could have possibly known about my fabrication. She wasn't there. It had happened almost a week ago. None of the kids at school would speak to someone else's mother. That was an unspoken law. Unless, of course, there were sweets involved, and then it was only an attempt to get said sweets. Then, like a lightning bolt, it hit me. How could I have been so careless? Had love blinded me to the harsh reality of my mother's own wicked past? Oh, what a dumb, love-struck fool I had been. When Mom and Dad arrived, I asked how she found out, and all she would say was, "A mother always knows." That phrase still sends chills up my spine. For the rest of my school years, I lived in mortal fear that she would pop out of a bush or be disguised as a cat, just as I did something bad. This explains why I never got a lick in 12 years of school. Many years later, we talked of this incident, and I asked how she knew. Laughing, she said that Mrs. Johnson was a friend of hers and had called a few days later about something else entirely. During their chat, Mrs. Johnson casually told my mom about the cute little thing that I had done. Needless to say, she did not find it so charming. The lesson was learned, and I survived. Was my mom really a witch? No. I'm almost certain she wasn't. Well, pretty darn sure, I think. One thing I do know, I still love bananas.
Mike Nolan has been teaching at North Little Rock High School East Campus since 1990 and is the chair of the Fine Arts Department. So how about our stories and storytellers tonight? Have a great night, and we'll see you next week at Starving Artist Cafe in the Argenta Arts District of North Little Rock, Arkansas, for another edition of Tales from the South. Good night, everybody.